Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is your official Leguizamarama spoiler warning. If you have not seen Once Upon a Time, The Superheroes, and you've always wanted to, I'm sorry, we're going to be talking all about the history of comic books and the characters within them. If you'd like to hold off listening to this podcast until you've watched that, that's fine. Please just listen until after the first ad. Thank you so much. Cheers and enjoy the show.
Peace. I hate the word.
I got one leg, you're gonna fuck your dick. You're gonna put a little cornstarch on my werewolf, man.
Luigi Mario!
Hello and welcome to Missions X Leguizamarama, a podcast where two friends watch everything starring their favorite actor, John Leguizamo.
Starring?
Including, it seems.
Yeah.
We'll get to this. We will save this. I am one of those hosts. My name is Zachary Ruane. You might know me from being 18 years old when The Dark Knight came out. So I think a synapse formed in the brain of there's about a 10-year window of boys where there's something in their synapse where they can never truly accept any criticism of that film.
Yeah, fair.
And I'm in that school. Mm. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Mishwa Trupp, who you might know from...
From never having seen any superhero films at the age of 18 because I was too busy getting fingered.
Hell yeah.
I was too busy being cool.
That hell yeah came from our very special guest this week. I asked him how he would like to be described in his intro. He used the words internet niche micro celebrity.
That is correct.
But I would say I'd get rid of a few of those qualifiers. At least two.
Certainly celebrity could go.
I'm not going to say which ones.
Micro would stay, I think. I'm very petite.
Yeah.
You're a petite man. He's co-host of Weekly Planet and the Weekly Planet.
Thank you. I wasn't going to say anything, but other people would say things.
I don't know if you'd had a drop the the moment.
Yeah. And Zuckerberg came in and he's like, you got to drop the the.
You got to drop the the. Now this is your moment, your crowning moment. You are now our superheroes guy.
Yes.
It's Nick Mason.
Hello, it's great to be back. Thank you. It's always good to be known as that guy. I mean, Ben Russell loves being the Ice Age guy. I mean, he's a huge fan of that.
Now that we've been doing this podcast for 3 years, we've picked up many guys. And we've got the Ice Age guy.
Yep.
We've got the sci-fi guy.
Wait, who's your sci-fi guy?
Sam Wiggum.
Oh, of course, yeah. Because
he reads sci-fi, doesn't he?
Yeah, he reads sci-fi. And the people that read sci-fi, they're the real sci-fi people.
It's true, yeah.
And now we've got a superheroes guy in you.
Yes.
But that also means I think that you're done with this podcast.
Yes, right?
After this episode.
I thought you were done after sport if you were our superhero
guy. But he hasn't,
guy.
Like... He's the one holdout in the world, a talented actor who doesn't necessarily have to audition for stuff, who could just, you know, get a meeting and get a role, who hasn't gone to the MCU and said, can I be a superhero?
Well, I mean, I feel like you would know this fun fact. This is our favourite fun fact on the podcast, and I just feel like in your line, have you heard who he was up for? Oh,
we get to tell the superhero guy a superhero fact.
This is really a very thrilling moment in our lives. And you'll remember it as soon as we say it.
Well, I need you to know because I learned it from this podcast because I am one of the 12 listeners.
Bless you.
So I've definitely heard you say it on here and he was offered it and he declined it. Is that right?
No. He was offered, was it the Vulture?
Yes.
Michael, Oh, I forgot his last name. Corleone. Yeah, I kept going for Michael Mann. Michael Mann.
Michael Mann was cast as the Vulture. No, John Leguizamo, we believe, based from words from John Leguizamo's very own mouth.
Yeah, I feel like
mouth.
we have it on. You know, we've got a primary source here.
But let's also say that we've not spoken to Michael Keaton, so we don't know his side of the story.
Yeah, that's true.
So from John Leguizamo's mouth, he was offered the role of the Vulture. It was set up for him.
Oh, yeah.
Then Michael Keaton came in and went, I will do it. I'll do it. And it was taken away from him.
And you guys suspect, I think, is it that they brought Leguizamo in as like a negotiating tactic? Like,
I think so.
Yeah, that's right. No, but he was like, I think he even went as far as had signed the contracts.
Interesting, right?
Like, well, because he claimed he could sue. He was like, I would sue, but I'm not going to because I think he'd like to do another one at some point in the next 15 years.
But he was there. Uh-huh. And it was like, I mean, it really is. It, of all the should have been a leading man but is now a character actor, he's so close to the pile. It's kind of like a thing of like he would be like, I mean, if you want should have been a leading man is now a character actor. I mean, God, I got this made. Unless, of course, Michael Keaton wants it. He's the guy. I mean, this is the guy. Like,
so fingers crossed, if we keep doing this for another 10 to 15 years, there will be a time in which you can come on and talk about a superhero film that John Leguizamo will star in the future.
It's wild he hasn't even done an MCU series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, surely Loki season 4, he'll get something. Like,
because they will, they offer a lot of money up front, from what I understand, for like even a very small role, because there's no residuals anymore in streaming stuff. So it's like, you want $10 million to come in and be
but
in
he's
this.
He's got Sid the Sloth money.
He does have Sid the Sloth money.
He paid off everything. He's good.
Yeah, he's fine. True. He paid off his life when they did the fucking Ice Age Christmas special. But we didn't get you on for Batman the Audio Adventures,
which
seems awful.
Stupid.
No, but you got Mark Bonanno, who is the
Batman guy. He's our Batman guy.
One of us has a Batman tattoo and it's not me. So.
Yeah, he's the Batman guy. So you've got to respect that. But no, I think we would all love to see John Leguizamo, you know. Would you think he'd be a villain? Because I think he'd be the mayor.
Oh, yes.
I don't
New York City.
Yeah, I think he would be the mayor or like the town clerk or something.
Yeah,
I think he's Gary Oldman. You know?
Gary Oldman. Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say, I can't even remember the name of the character, but Batman Returns, Christopher Walken's character.
Yes.
Max Schreck, sure.
Max Schreck, yeah. like he's that. I see that. I think in MCU he would be villain. Just because that's their pattern, that's what they do. But I could really see him in that role, in the sort of adjacent.
Yeah, the billionaire industrialist opposition to Bruce Wayne kind of.
Yeah, right. Like a couple of scenes, you know. Mm. Maybe like he's a part of something. He's like not the guy, but he's putting together the team.
Right, yeah. Nick Fury.
But not Nick Fury. Yeah. Okay. More like How I Met Your Mother kind of lady.
Yeah, How You Met Your Mother. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, more like a cult. Who's the guy that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Oh, Coulson.
Coulson.
Right. Uh-huh.
See, this is why we need the superhero.
Yeah, I've got absolutely no idea. This is seriously.
I thought, because I know who you talked, when you said How I Met Your Mother, you're Kobe Smulders, but
Kobe Smulders.
Did they form a team in How I Met Your Mother? Was there a storyline where they had to form up a team?
And Allison Hannigan becomes the villain who's ready to take over the city?
Do you think if he were to be a villain, would he be a suit and tie villain? Or do you think he'd be willing to put on a costume?
Oh, he'd costume up.
You think?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right.
But I think,
have you seen Spawn?
I have seen Spawn.
I think he would be the kind of character that doesn't suit up until right at the end.
Yeah, right.
And the suit, I'm really just going with their version of Vulture. The suit, you know, where it's like the suit was for practical purposes, but now actually in this context I see how it's a suit. Like it's like a work suit or it's a
it's
not that he suits up, but by the end it's like, well, actually that's the costume.
I am so sorry. I wish to retract a statement. Because just in while you were speaking then, it just occurred to me that he wouldn't be the mayor or the town clerk. He wouldn't be the one of the people. He would be the villain. Why? Because of witty quips. And I think John Leguizamo would go ham on villainous witty quips.
Do you know what I think? I think he'd be the third act twist villain. I think he'd be you think he's just a guy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You think he's the mayor. But turns out the mayor has wings. Sorry, I'm just really on vulture.
Has electric eyes or something.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Sure, right.
Yeah, the mayor is behind it. And not only that, he has the same powers as the hero.
Mm. Oh, we love that, don't we? You love that in a movie.
You're the superhero guy, though. What do you think?
Oh, boy. Well, if he's got wings, he could be Man-Bat, who is a man who it sounds like I'm making him up.
Yeah, did you make him up?
No, he's real. Man-Bat. He's Dr. Kirk Langstrom, and he's lost his hearing, so he decides to use bat DNA to bring it back.
Wow.
But then he turns into a horrible man-bat hybrid. And then you could give him those wings that you're obsessed with, Zach.
Wow.
Giving him wings, you know.
Phenomenal.
Right? I love that.
This is a whole, like, and this isn't me being like, I hate sci-fi, and then obviously you can pick that apart like a mother bitch, but.
Hey, I don't pick it apart. You like sci-fi. And you demonstrate it regularly when you talk about all the sci-fi you like.
No, superhero films is a world that I know so little about. Mm. They're not movies I go see. I couldn't tell you what Avengers is a part of if Batman and Spider-Man are made by different people. They are, right?
Batman and Spider-Man are made by different people.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Like DC Marvel?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so I don't know.
Like most movies are made by different people to varying degrees.
Or did you mean like
in a
genetic way? Because the Wayne family gave birth to Batman and the Parker family gave birth to Spider-Man.
Parker, yeah. Mm. What? I couldn't tell you. Like I honestly don't watch them. So yeah, I don't know them. At all.
Well, actually,
so this is very interesting. This is very interesting for me, like even if we talk about the fucking documentary, is that I literally didn't know any of this stuff at all.
Yeah.
I was like going in very dry.
Well, all you have to do
You never want to go in dry, Mish.
I was going to say, Mish, you only really have to write it out, I think, for a few more years and you won't have to know anything about superheroes ever
again.
Why? Well, they're not doing well, like financially. They're sinking.
Really?
Because they're bad now. I don't know if any of you...
Well,
I know this. I'm the Dark Knight generation.
Yeah, that's right.
I purchased...
When they were about something.
We believe.
And we used to be a proper country.
My partner had a birthday, as we all tend to do.
Oh,
and I felt like doing something cute and I bought him tickets. It was a selfless present because I was like, I'll buy him tickets to the new Batman film. So this was the broody Twilight one.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? I was like, I'll buy him Gold Class because we all love a bit of trash. I'll buy him Gold Class tickets to Batman. I'll buy him a nice big thing of popcorn and a Jimmy Coke at the movies, right? And that'll be his present. He's the one who shacked up with someone poor, so he has to deal with that as his present, right?
Hey, you know, the bloody bunch of account in the popcorn cinemas are not cheap anymore.
Now, I have seen a lot of Batman films, not all the Nolans, just the one with Heath Ledger. Right, that's a Nolan one, right?
See, Mish, this is the one thing I would say the synapse is going up. My well, actually, alarm.
No.
I've over the years with social media and so on and so forth, I've decided that I've gone with unless it's life or death, I don't feel the need to correct anybody, and I do not wish to be
corrected. Did I say something wrong there? No,
I was just saying you're getting close.
You're talking
about Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, you got to be careful, because when it was revealed that the Bat motorcycle came out of the Batmobile, that was a transcendent moment for me.
Oh, you know, my God.
I knew that we were going to see that Bat motorcycle at some point.
I hate this.
When it was revealed that it was like an emergency evacuation from the Batmobile, that blew my mind, Mish.
Anyway, I went and saw this Twilight Batman film. I liked the Keaton Batmans. Uh-huh. I enjoyed those. But the rest have all just kind of been a bit muddy and they've been on, but I've never properly watched them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Went and saw this Batman movie, forced to watch it.
I'm so excited to see what Mish thinks of this
movie. It's
gold
class, it's giant, it's in my face. We've got the popcorn, we've got the Jimmy Cokes. And I've watched that film and I honestly, and I say this from the bottom of my heart,
I'm so excited.
I cannot understand how anyone could enjoy it.
Yes.
It was just like, and so when you say it's dying, I'm like, well, yeah, that movie was so boring.
Mm.
Boring and one tone and shit. It was just a shit film.
Nick directed that
film. No. Wait, did you have any form of involvement in that film?
No, why?
Oh, my God, don't do that. Don't do that.
Mish, I work in public transport. Why would you think that I would? Did you not even like... Didn't he like the bit where he has to escape from the police headquarters and so he zips up his squirrel suit and then he like leaps off and he cracks his head on the bridge?
Oh,
do you
my
remember that
God.
Bit?
It's so, it was like, and when I, okay, I'm not going to say, okay, I take back that it was so shit. I just can't imagine how anyone could really enjoy it. You know what I mean? I was like, and granted, I'm not, I don't have a love affair with Batman, but I was just like, I don't.
Yeah, that's Vicky Vale.
I don't know who that is.
Julie Madison, that's one of another one of his girlfriends.
But then he's got a new lady every film.
That's right.
Does he just Batman? Because for Parker, for Spider-Man, it's always Kirsten Dunst, right? Like, what's her character?
Well, not Kirsten Dunst.
what's her name? Jane.
He's obsessed with the actor Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
Mary Jane. Mary Jane. Yeah, and sometimes Gwen Stacy.
Did Mary?
But then they.
Was her name Mary Jane before Mary Jane became slang for the weed?
Oh, I don't know.
No, I think it was after.
Well.
And a teenage boy. Teenage boy loving.
We'll
Mary
get a
Jane.
DM about it. Could someone slide in and let us know which came first, the chicken or the egg, the Mary Jane or the fucking ounce of weed? Anyway, that's my experience with Batman and superhero films.
That's great. That's a really, you went hard. You always go hard. Did you like the Batman?
I did, yeah.
Oh, fuck.
But it's all
relevant.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I didn't watch it.
What?
I know.
You still haven't seen it.
Still haven't seen it. And
I don't
and
think
I,
you'd like it.
I go to watch it. I go to watch it on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And I'd never have it in me.
Yeah, right.
And I love Batman as a character. Mm-hmm. I didn't want a dark Batman.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
I just was like, I've seen, not dark, dark, I think dark light, that's stupid. Mm. But I just didn't want like Batman but real, Batman but like, oh, Batman yeah, right, but uh-huh. film genre. And it's just, I can't bring myself to, I'm sure I reckon I'd like it. I reckon I'll watch it and be like, oh, yeah, it's pretty good.
I have, so.
They can put that on the Blu-ray release. Yeah, like, that was all right. I didn't watch it for 4 years, but
yeah,
it was all right.
It's pretty good. It's, yeah, a bit long, but it's pretty good.
I would place a fitty on you not liking that film. I don't think you'll like it.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ. Please don't accept that bet. I can't afford
I'll
that.
I'll take it.
Because also, Zach, you could watch it and just lie.
Yeah, and then claim a fitty.
I would lie to get $50.
Well, and doesn't that say something about the quality of journalism these days,
doesn't
that he would
it?
Lie for $50?
Yeah.
But based on you saying you didn't want a dark Batman, I'd like to read the blurb of this, if that's okay.
Yeah, okay.
It relates to something that's in the
dark. And can I just say, Dark Knight Generation, I love a dark Batman. Mm. I just was like,
you've had enough of Dark Batman?
I just didn't know if it was differentiated from the trailers and the vibe. I didn't feel like it was doing enough in its marketing to convey to me that it was differentiating itself enough from the Nolan films.
Mm.
That
yeah,
it was,
right.
That it was, but that I think might have been a marketing campaign that was designed to say, hey, it's like the Nolan films and actually the movie isn't that much like them. But there was just a lot of like, big, expansive, still like the cinematography in the trailers looked so much like Nolan.
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm. And I was just like, well, if we're gonna do it, why don't we go like more grungy, more handheld, more like.
Well, there's a bit of Nirvana on the soundtrack, so that's pretty grungy.
It's true. And also, I love Keaton's Batman. I love a Batman that's like a little bit la di da.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want another Batman that's a little bit like
a bit of Zazazoo.
A little bit of comfortable telling the butler what to do.
Yeah, well, he's the one guy who's just like, you know, the Alfred just keeps bringing him fancy soups and so forth. And there's no moment in those movies where he's like, well, I should be more of a man of the people. He's just eating his cold
soup. He's a Batman who has time to fucking wash his hair. Robert Pattinson's Batman was filth. Wash your bathe. That man can afford like expensive cleaning products.
Mm.
So he was just gross and dirty, but Keaton's Batman. Washes.
Have you seen The Flash, Zach?
No, I have not, and I do want to watch it. I really do want to watch it because of all the reasons that people hate it. I'm so psyched for the little cameos. They got like fun little cameos at the end. I'm like, yeah, give me them. Give me the cameos.
Oh, this one's problematic. Oh, this one's in very bad taste because he died. He died because he got typecast. I don't know if you know this, Mish, but The Flash.
Is this the story of where they made the whole film for like a fucking ridiculous sum of money? And then right before release, it was exposed that the guy who played The Flash is like...
I know, that was about 2 years before.
Yeah, years before. And but also it's sort of a real cavalcade of just hey, you remember this? What about this old thing that you like? But Michael Keaton's in it.
Oh, so, phenomenal.
Yeah, as old Batman. So
it's very funny because people like, because we've talked a lot about our love of Keaton Batman on this podcast, more than we should have, considering that there's nothing to do with
it. That's like whatever we'd like.
It's very on
we
us.
Talk, we talk so much about Keaton's Batman and Muriel's wedding. And what we'd do if we had $1 million.
God, what would you do?
I would buy like an apartment.
In, oh, yeah, nice.
But no, but because I love Keaton's Batman, so many people were like, well, you must be excited for The Flash. Mm. And I was like, well, it depends. Is Keaton doing... And it's not that I don't love Keaton's Batman. I love Keaton's Bruce Wayne.
Ah.
I think he's got the best Bruce Wayne by far.
Mm. I like the villains in Keaton's Batmans. So I guess I'd like Burton's Batmans.
Yeah.
I suppose.
But well, I like Schumacher's Batman.
Yeah.
I'm a proud Schumacher man.
Who's Schumacher?
He did the last two of the Burton universe.
So they're the horniest two.
Which is those ones?
Batman and Robin and Batman.
Oh, Batman and Robin.
I love
that. I love that film. Oh God, this is going to become like a sci-fi thing. I do love Batman and Robin.
Yeah, yeah, no. But no, that's a very controversial take in the comic book community.
Yeah, yeah. No, I do love Batman.
Love that. What do you think of Batman and Robin?
In theory, I should like it. We revisited it recently.
Yeah,
podcast, and it's too far in one direction. Also, I think Clooney is a very ineffectual Bruce Wayne.
Clooney did not get the memo.
No,
he didn't know what the like. Yeah, yeah. You're right. Ineffectual is such a good way to put it. He plays the laissez-faire, Keaton's, but without the depth behind it. Like Keaton does it, but there is the darkness.
Yeah. And also on a very superficial level, he just has like that George Clooney, that era haircut, like just the buzz cut. And like, that's not a billionaire haircut. What are you doing?
If they were to make another Batman film, and you had
they
to choose.
Won't. They're not going to make it.
No, they're done.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you heard that? They were like, you know what?
The last one is the broody one?
No, we're kidding.
We're joking.
They'll never
make
Batman.
Two different Batmans.
Yeah, they're doing a sequel to that one, and they're doing a different universe Batman. And then maybe another one.
God, they're trying really hard.
Well,
aren't they?
Batman's their only guaranteed moneymaker, really. So. Okay.
Well, if you had to choose between another Batman movie with George Clooney as the Batman or Val Kilmer as the Batman.
George Clooney.
Which one are you choosing?
I guess it's, Clooney.
Yeah, I'd choose Clooney.
But because I like that he's not right for it, I think that we're getting there as a society, but Batman and Robin needs to be put in the same basket as the Adam West series.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, now with the distance of time.
Yeah.
We can say what that, like, we put that in the camp Batman category.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And I love it for that. Mm. I think
100%.
It's a very special film. But I've said that a billion times on this podcast. Let's go to an ad break.
I think we go to an ad, and when we come back, we each just say who our favorite superhero is. That's nice.
Oh, okay. Yeah, great.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, cool.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Cool, so we'll go to an ad. All right, thank you so much for sticking around post-ad. My favorite superhero, it would be Aquaman, and the reasoning is because when we were growing up, we got a Nutella that came in a novelty cup.
Okay.
And when you finished your Nutella, you got a glass at the end of it.
Yeah, nice.
And mine was Aquaman because that was the one that Mum purchased for me, and we never got Nutella ever after that. But I always had my orange juice from my Aquaman cup. So he's my favorite.
So that would have been traditional Aquaman. So
oh
like
yeah,
Momoa,
like,
but like he's blonde and he's kind
yes,
of
yes, and it was like a comic book version.
Yeah,
of
right.
Aquaman. Right. He was great. Very hot.
Yeah, he's a hot guy.
I would argue the hottie of the superhero universe.
They're on the third round of reshoots for the next Aquaman.
Really? Is it Jason Momoa again?
Even it is, for, yeah. Yep.
Yes. And it's, I mean, it's James Wan, who's like I love as a director, so I will see.
I don't often, like, I don't think of Jason Momoa as like big time hottie, oddly enough.
Mm. Yeah, I would put him right up in your category.
Yeah, no, he is. Mm. Now I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, you just don't think about
him. I just don't think about him often. When I think of Aquaman, I think of comic book Nutella cup.
Because of your Nutella cup.
Yeah, because of my
you've
Nutella got
cup. You've set up the reason
just
why.
Just imagine he's like a chef in a like a late night kind of nice. Burger joint or something like that.
Oh, if Jason Momoa was a chef.
Yeah.
Oh, there's no hope for me at all.
Yeah, yeah, you want to say, yeah, imagine Jason Momoa between jobs, like when he's allowed to drink his beers,
And he's just a little, like just a little bit mean to me. Just slightly, you wouldn't even pick it, right?
Yeah, it's like why are you still texting Lisa? Yeah. Is it Lisa?
Lisa Bonet? Or
Bonet, yeah. Yeah. Right. Why are you still texting Lisa Bonet?
Yeah. Like, I'm not a jealous person, but you do still seem to like all of her Instagram photos.
I'm not a jealous person, but she's one of the most attractive people of all time. And it's a little uncomfortable for me because you're one of the most attractive people of all time.
Meanwhile, he's just poaching eggs and just being like, I don't want to talk about
it. Isn't it wild that Jason Momoa, like, here we are in our world, and Jason Momoa would have moments where he's like, fuck, I'll never be Lenny Kravitz. Right? Like, that's his vibe.
Oh, that's so funny, Zach.
Oh, man.
If my dick came out of my leather pants, you know, maybe it wouldn't be as impressive. You know?
My favorite superhero is Daredevil. Nice. Not any. I haven't seen the series yet, even though that came out 7 years ago. But I love the comic book Daredevil. And I feel like we've never seen that version. We've never seen the sort of Frank Miller, 80s, but also the Catholic. He's a really complex, interesting character. I think he's everything I love about Batman, but he's working class and he's disabled. So he's just got he's got a disability. So he's just such an interesting, complex character. Love Daredevil.
Okay.
Love Daredevil.
I love that. Nick.
My favorite character, I've Googled him because you need a visual aid. Because he's not. I know my stuff. Don't even worry.
Yeah,
about
but
there's
hoping
a, there's
for
there's a DC enormous. Comic book character called Starman. He's like the seventh one because it's a very extremely common a title. But he came to be in like the early 2000s, and he's like the son of the original Starman. And his brother was also Starman, but his brother gets killed. And so he has to take on the role, but he doesn't wear the costume.
Is this a comic book?
This is a comic book character. But he doesn't wear the costume because he thinks it's stupid. And he's like a vintage dealer. Like that's his regular job. Mm. And he doesn't want to fight anybody.
Wow.
But he's got like the equipment and he has to like fight all his father's old villains and like, you know, There's been a prophecy and like it's an enormous thing. But he's this guy. He's like
he's fabulous.
Yeah,
I'm gonna move away from the microphone. This is a little Art Deco kind of
vibe. But he's like a hipster. He's like a real hipster doofus kind of character.
Oh, look at his jacket.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll show you.
It looks like he's gone
got
a bit of
that's the back of the jacket.
Oh yeah, he looks like he's gone op shopping.
Yeah. He's this guy. But basically, it's like, and what I like about it is that. A few things I like about it. One is it was a complete saga and then it ended. Mm. It went for 80 issues and like a couple of annuals and stuff like that. And then it was just over. But also the guy who created this version of Starman, James Robinson, he has some sort of deal with DC Comics where they can't use the character again unless they ask him and he approves it. And he's always said no.
How did he get that deal?
So I don't know. I don't know. It's wild, but what is great about that is they can't just bring him back and ruin him.
Mm.
Like you've got this perfect.
But DC's
series.
Never done that before.
So that's my guy.
I love that answer.
Yeah,
he that's might amazing. Be my new favorite too.
I'm gonna
he
check
looks
him
great.
Out. I when I was growing up or when I was a teenager, I didn't read a lot of superhero comics or like. I read but I read graphic novels.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah. Hey. But not because I was like, you know, because it had novel in the title. It's because I was a country boy. I only got to the city so often.
Yeah.
Those were the only ones where I was going to get the full story.
Well, yeah, you don't want to buy one issue and then be like, how does this end? And you don't go back for 4 months. And by the time you come back, the storyline's moved on or whatever. And you're like, why is everybody dead or whatever? you want to get the full thing. I get it.
Aren't graphic novels a bit porny?
Well, I mean, so... So technically, a graphic novel... Well, this is how it used to be. A graphic novel used to be like an original piece of media. So it was like one story, self-contained. And a trade paperback was like a bunch of single issues that they'd pack together into one.
Oh, I didn't like know one it had thing, a different title.
Which is very common now. Like, that's the biggest seller generally in comic books, is like 6 or 8 issues and they pack it together and it's like this one thing. But graphic novels, like back in the day, it might have been like, well, it was a Batman story, but it was like separate and it was just like this one thing and you would, you know, you it was.
But
just,
I would use the more populist term. When I say graphic novel, I mean both of those.
Yeah, things. Right, right. Yeah, okay. That's sort of what it's become now. Yeah. But yeah, like oftentimes like when it was graphic novel was like, it would often be like more adult content.
Yeah, because it's like what
something you put on your shelf.
So I always kind of assumed, and this is because I'm a big stupid bitch. She doesn't know anything about. What?
You're the only one that's... Like, we're cool, man. You don't have to like this.
I mean, I've got a T-shirt that says I'm with a stupid bitch. And there's an arrow to the left. But that could be anybody. I could have sat over there.
You're good. Just a photo of my face giving a thumbs up. Like, stupid bitch. No, I assumed comic books were a lot more kind of like wham, bam, bit of fun. Kids can get into it. And graphic novels were kind of aimed more at adults. But I mean, obviously I'm wrong. But I just assumed graphic novels had like titties and stuff.
Well, I think, you can get titties from either. It's
no, but see, I would assume that there were no titties in a comic book.
They weren't for years, for a really long time.
Yeah.
How deep are we going to, how long is this podcast
going to
be?
Should we intro? I mean, we're right on comic books. Let's talk about the history of comic books.
All right, so this is the intro to what we just watched. Once Upon a Time, The Superheroes is a 2001 documentary about the history of comic books, comic characters, and the creators who brought them to life. Up until the year 2001. As many of
not much. Lucky, like they would only need to add like 5 minutes if they did a
remote. Yeah, as many of our listeners probably know, a lot has happened in the world of superheroes since Y2K. But as this documentary was released just after the original X-Men movie, that's all we've got. Isn't CGI amazing? John Leguizamo plays the clown character from Spawn in some archival footage placed in the documentary upon the discussion of the influx of violence that began to creep its way into our superhero stories in the 90s, right before the first X-Men film was released in the year 2000. You can watch this documentary on YouTube. It was uploaded 15 years ago and in 10 different parts, which meant we had to watch it with a lot of Coles commercials throughout our viewing of this doco.
I've got YouTube Premium. As previously mentioned, I'm in public transport. So
you've got that sweet public transport dollar.
That's right.
I'm actually kind of keen to talk about this because I learnt so much because I didn't know anything about this stuff.
That's real. I would love to know what I've got. Two things that I'd love to know.
Okay,
I would love to know, Nick, what you didn't learn. Or if you did learn anything from this, because I feel like it was very like covering all, you know.
Yeah.
But I would really love to know what you learned. I would love to know what you didn't know. Like, that's an interesting
thing. So much. Like, because I've never really thought about comic books before. Like,
they are for grubs. Don't worry about it.
I think that they're for gross, nerdy losers.
They are.
And I'm just not interested in those smelly boys.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's never been a world I've kind of put myself into, so I'd never even considered when they started, how they became, and the development of them. To me, broody ass Batman, and you know, early days, you know, Superman, are two completely different worlds. And the concept that they all spawn from this one thing.
Spawn.
You'd like that?
Yeah, I love it.
Well, they all kind of started in this one place. And how did those like 1940s Superman moments turn into broody-ass Twilight Batman?
Right, yeah.
Incredible. I thought it was just really cool to watch. Well, I mean, we're obviously not talking about broody-ass Robert Pattinson Batman because that's 2022 and you know, this documentary ended in 2001. And it was just, I thought it was really, really funny to watch them, the excitement of the X-Men films, right? And how this is revolutionizing superhero films, man. And I mean, I'm sure it did. It really did. It was, you know, this next
X-Men,
step up.
X-Men kind of gets forgotten in terms of its influence in the
superhero space.
So to have it be the it's, you know, got a lot of special treatment in this film.
Yeah,
that it maybe
right.
wouldn't have.
This is a real interesting kind of inflection point to jump in on. Yeah. Of like, oh, you have, none of you have any idea of what's coming up after this. You have no idea that, you know, in the next couple of decades, this is going to dominate the entire world and then disintegrate, essentially.
Yeah.
You have no idea. But, I mean, some of them, like, there's a guy, like, who was it? I think it might have been Travis Charest or somebody in this documentary who was like, or Bill Sienkiewicz, who goes like, oh, it goes in waves. Like, you know, it gets really gritty and then it dips out of that, and then it, you know, goes back in, and that's been true of comics, and that's true of the movie stuff as well. Like, there's a moment in it where Lauren Donner, who's Richard Donner's wife, who's the only woman in this documentary.
Yeah, I was about to say, we're
into like part nine, but we got to like part nine or part ten. But she's a long time movie producer, and she was like, yeah, we can't really do, you know, we thought we can't put the X-Men in these yellow costumes. It'll look stupid. So we're going to put them in the leather suits. And it's like, yeah, that worked for a while. But now if you dared to put, because they're bringing back the X-Men because Disney bought Fox complete in its entirety. If you were to bring them back and put them in the black leather costumes again, people would go insane. Mm. They would flip out. They'd be like, excuse me, we've been waiting decades for this, to put Wolverine in his orange and brown or whatever, or Cyclops in his suit with a big yellow X on the front or whatever, and you didn't do it? How dare you?
So are they going to do that now?
We don't know yet.
No doubt, but they will.
Yeah.
Oh, they great. Will. Good.
Mm. Well, no.
Why is that not good?
People are simultaneously getting over it. they're like, I think they're also getting to a point where it's like, I don't, you'd have a much better perspective of this. So I remember reading an interview with Steven Spielberg like 10 years ago when superhero movies were like the culture, and that was it. Like, it was it, you know, it had really just made its mark. And people were like, are you ever going to do a superhero movie? Do you think movies have changed forever? And he said, he was like, there was a point where Westerns were everything, where they were virtually the only genre of thing that kids watched, that there was a sense that Westerns are cinema, et cetera, et cetera. And then he said, and it, people grew tired of it.
Mm. Yeah.
And he's like, it will happen for superhero movies. And people were literally like, no.
No, Stephen, I think you've forgotten that we've won. The nerds have actually won.
They're like, actually, Captain America, the new Captain America is like a 70s thriller. It's like, yeah, but it's more Captain America than it is 70s thriller. Yeah. And we're getting to the fatigue. Superhero fatigue is that we're getting to that point.
Well, I feel like, and again, this is from an outsider's perspective, but it feels very much like every time something is going to be released, there is this kind of like overwhelming universal eye roll that happens before each film. Like, everyone's going into it going, oh, come on.
There's, oh, really?
That's kind of the vibe. Is that incorrect vibe?
There was a sense where even if I didn't like it or wasn't excited about it, I would go and watch it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Whereas I still haven't seen The Flash. Yeah. But I would have seen The Flash 5 years ago, even if I was like, and I'm kind of interested in The Flash. There's aspects of The Flash that, like, there's parts of The Flash that I'm really keen to watch. Mm. But I haven't seen it yet. I still haven't seen The Batman. There are certain movies. Yeah. I haven't seen the new Ant-Man. There's that, like...
Sure. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, what are your feelings?
Well, I think mate,
you're the superhero guy.
I'm the superhero guy. I don't actually know that much about it, but here we go.
Do your job, superhero guy.
Probably one aspect of that is that people are obsessed with seeing all the stuff in advance, and we do, you know, and there are a lot of blogs and stuff that chew through all of this and go, oh my God, this person was spotted on set. Do you think they're being cast as this person? Or like, you know, in the last movie, they teased this character. So is it going to be this? And so in a lot of ways, you already know what's going to happen in the upcoming movie. So for me, the eye roll is often like, They'll put a secret character in the trailer, and it's like, who's this going to be? And it's like, we know who it's going to be. It's you hire this actor, and we know what character they're going to play, and we've seen them run through set with a blanket over them, but we saw the costume underneath, so we know who it's going to be. So we sort of it's taken a lot of the mystery out of this sort of stuff, I think. Whereas early stuff, especially. I mean, movies in general, but like, you know, early superhero stuff generally, it was just like, I don't know what we're going to see in this, but it's always like now it's just people clamoring. We've got to have this character. We've got to have this hero and villain, and we've got to see this sequence and this storyline. And
people are like disappointed. That's something I find, is that it's like a lot of criticism of superhero films now are not criticism of what the film was, but criticism of what people were expecting it to be.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, like I think that was like, and I really saw it with the TV shows, because people were going week by week.
Yeah, uh-huh.
There were so many different stories being predicted. And then you get to the end of it and it's like, oh, it wasn't, because I'd heard 50 different versions and some of them were better. Like,
yeah, well, exactly. A lot of people are kind of shooting themselves in the foot. There was a show called WandaVision, which was...
Oh, I heard about this, yeah.
And it was, the show itself, I think, was, because it was one of Marvel's earliest attempts at TV, and they really put a lot of work in, and every episode sort of took place in a different era of television. Like, it started like as an I Love Lucy kind of sitcom, and they did all the effects with wires and all this sort of stuff, and then they sort of ramped it up. But people were, it was so intriguing that, like, every week, and we were guilty of this, we definitely did this.
It's not your fault, gonna make
that content. but you can, I think there's a difference between speculating, oh, I wonder in the next episode they'll do this, and being like, if they don't bring this character in, I'm going to be furious, because all the clues that I've seen, I've interpreted to say that it's going to be, like, there's a character called Mephisto, who's like Marvel's version of the devil, and they were like, well, he's going to be playing on this, isn't he? Is obviously all the clues point to this guy, and then it got to the end, and it was a different thing, and I like to think that if I'm, you know, I like to be surprised. I'm like, oh, good, they turned this into a different direction, but people are like, I was sure it was going to be this guy, and now I'm mad about it. Do better next time, Marvel.
It's like the metatextual. It's almost because these series are so... It's just an interesting point.
It is. I'm excited for the documentary about this era.
Yeah.
Also because Disney especially don't... They don't let people behind the curtain, really. Like, they give, you know, a lot of people access to the stars and all that sort of stuff, but you don't really know what's happening behind the scenes in terms of, like, what bridges they're burning and, like, you know, what stuff had to be trashed because they, you know, negotiations broke down or what have you. There's a... When the MCU started, when Marvel Studios kicked off, there are some really interesting making-ofs for Iron Man and Iron Man 2 and Captain America and Thor. And they don't do them anymore because Disney, I think, likes to appear to be perfect.
Wow.
Like, oh, we just produce magic. But if you watch the documentary behind Iron Man, it's an hour of people just going, of Jeff Bridges and John Favreau and Robert Downey Jr. and all these guys going, we don't know what's happening.
Yeah, just panicking.
Literally writing in the morning.
They were writing on the day, like Robert Downey Jr. and John Favreau are just in the trailer being like, okay, what can we do in this scene? What can happen? And the fact that movie came out and is good.
Yeah.
Like, it's, I think it's genuine.
I'd like to see the first Iron Man.
Yeah.
There's something I'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah, but I mean, it's something of a miracle. When I was a kid, my favorite character was Iron Man. And I'm like, God, this better be good. This is going to be embarrassing for me somehow. This is bad.
I think that for, like, I would be keen on watching, I've never seen Iron Man. I'd be keen on watching Iron Man because I've heard that Iron Man, and correct me if I'm wrong, don't even correct me, it's whoever told me. They're the one who gave me the wrong information. But Iron Man is the only one who's like, yeah, I'm a fucking superhero.
Well, that like, changed.
Is that right?
Well, so
he was.
Yeah, so that movie sort of put paid to the idea that modern superheroes have secret identities. Like, before that, every character in the comic books and every character on, you know, in the movies and TV shows was like, there was always a running subplot of like, I hope the wife doesn't discover my secret identity or whatever. But at the end of the first Iron Man, he's just like, I'm Iron Man. And that's why I think one of the reasons that people, I think, really responded to Marvel Studios initially was that it did sort of take apart some of the tropes of superhero stuff, and it did it was willing to make fun of itself in a way that people who wouldn't normally watch this sort of thing recognize. Like, there's a scene in the first Avengers movie where Iron Man meets Thor, and Thor is kind of like, he's a Norse god and he wears a cape and he, you know, he's got a helmet with wings on it and all this sort of stuff. And there's a line in it, and I think this is the line that maybe kicked off the mainstream success of the Marvel Universe, which is Iron Man sees him and he goes, oh, does mother know you weareth her drapes kind of thing? Like, is this, because he talks in this weird Shakespearean accent and he looks weird. And I think the audience went, oh, he's acknowledged this is stupid.
Yeah.
Like, it looked like we've got the colourful costumes, we've got the comic book accurate costumes and everything looks like it. And I think a lot of people would go in and be like, I don't like, this is stupid. But if you get the cool guy in the movie to go, this is, you look stupid.
Yeah.
This is, I think people were like, oh, I get, he's like,
I can get on board with that.
I can get on board with this.
It's something, there's almost a pattern that happens, I think. It's such an interesting, I think there's two things I want to say off that, which is, but the first one is that people forget how experimental and how out there the vision of the Marvel Cinematic Universe was 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
People love to be like, oh, it's so safe, it's so blah, blah, blah. It's like, not then. I remember the idea, like when they were hinting at an Avengers movie and that we were going to have these movies, like that had never been done. Mm. And that idea of this like multiple film framework was so out there and interesting. And so I just want to give credit, like in history, I think that 24, how many films, the from Iron Man to Avengers Endgame, that like story arc, that project is an interesting piece of cinema.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But the other thing I just wanted to say is it's a bit of a pattern that happens. Watching Barbie, I had this moment where I was watching it where I loved that film.
Have you seen Barbie?
I have. I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved Barbie.
And I loved it. And I was like, the lesson, as it always should be, from this film should be give creative people the freedom to create. Give creative people the freedom to interrogate the concept, the IP, and to create something interesting and new and original, because that's what the first Iron Man
is. And that's what ultimately I think has sort of doomed them in a way, because the first one was that it was like, let's make it funny, let's work really hard on the script and have it all make sense, and like the visual effects still hold up if you. The Iron Man suit, in a lot of cases, it's all digital, but it looks real because they worked really hard on it. But what happened is they made a handful of them, and then leading up to like the first Avengers movie, and then what happened is they really set a formula.
Exactly.
Make it, you know, the world's always at stake, and make it quippy, and, you know, and I don't know, other things.
Rather than
rather
than get Jon Favreau in, and give him the freedom to make something. That should have been the lesson out of Iron Man.
But then what they did is they were like, well, this one made $400 million, and the next one made $500 million, and this one made $600 million, and this one made $1 billion. Do not mess with the formula.
Yeah.
It's got to be exactly this every single time, and so it's reached a point where.
So movies are making $1 billion, but everyone hates them.
And
they're making more $700 million now.
Yeah.
It's on the way.
I think it's diminishing returns, or it's like people are cottoning on. I think over a span of time.
So basically, when it peaked financially, it wasn't peaking like in popularity.
No,
but you know what I'm saying. Like the people weren't liking the movies. The more money the movie was making, it didn't necessarily mean that the quality was there.
I think Endgame was the last kind of one to cap off this big Infinity saga that they did for 10 years. And I think post that, the cracks are really forming, in the sense that I think the plots are developed like years in advance. They're like, we're going to do this storyline, and they bring in a director and they basically go, okay, well, the story's already been written. And we've done most of the action sequences. We've designed how the action sequences go, and we've put the skeleton of the plot of how we get from one action sequence to the next action sequence. And you can't change anything. As a director, you can't change anything because the next movie is going to have plot elements from this movie in it. So you can't change anything. So really all the director's there to do is get decent performances out of the cast, really.
Yeah, you know? Maybe and, add some aesthetic flourish.
And, and they're acting against a lot of green screen, and they're overworking all the VFX companies.
Yeah.
One thing that came out on Reddit quite recently, like within the last year, was a bunch of people from VFX companies going, okay, if you're looking at a Marvel movie and a character's like shooting a laser, that might be like the 50th version of that laser that we'd had to design, and they just churned through and went, no, not good enough, keep going, keep going, keep going. And it might have been, they might have locked that one in a week before the movie was due to come out. So, like, this, that looks bad. If they'd had 3 months to work on this one laser beam, it might look incredible, but they've had a week, essentially. Mm. So, and that's, you know, and again, like, a lot of this stuff looks... Anyway, I love Marvel movies, is what I'm saying.
No,
but I genuinely do love a lot of them, and I think the, like you were saying, Zach, the, you know, how Westerns dropped off, you can still see a Western. They still make them. There's still been some really good ones. They made 3:10 to Yuma and True Grit and Buster Scruggs. I really like Buster Scruggs. I don't know if you've seen that one. But they have to be good to cut through now. I think we can't just have, oh, there's one every, you know, month and we'll all see him. I think we're going to have to be like...
I think it's a good... like, and I agree. I think it's an exciting time. I think it's going to take us about 5 years before... like, I think there might be a transition period. But I look at something like The Boys. I think The Boys is an incredible series.
I mean, I have to fucking watch
that show. Yeah, right. Because The Boys feels like the graphic novels I was reading as a teenager. Mm-hmm. They're subversive.
Boobs.
Yeah, titties. Boobs. Are the
titties. No, it's subversive. Mm. But it's also... in a way that it's not just a direct literal translation. It's taking what was interesting about those. And what it is, you know, last week we had Alexi Toliopoulos off on and we were talking about Carlito's Way.
Oh, yeah.
And we were talking about how it's a movie that a lot of its brilliance comes from the fact that you know the tropes of the genre.
Mm.
This sort of playing off the tropes, playing against the tropes, within the tropes, to say new things. And The Boys, I think, is the best example of something that's really using this iconography and these images to say something about our world today.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, these are our, you know, these are our myths. The documentary
and
talks
like
about
good
this.
Sci-fi, you know, you want to... you know, it's set in the future, but it tells you something about now. And it's the same, you're right, it's the same with The Boys, that they're these overly corporatized monsters that are just all awful.
It's not just about, it's about our world. And it's these are our modern myths. So you can use this stuff to say something. And I think the comics do it really well. Good comics, good graphic novels do it really well. And I think the films are about to hit that.
Mm.
Kind of in relation to that, something I found really interesting about this documentary that we watched, because again, I didn't know anything about this shit, was like, so it was...
The little pictures?
I like how cute they are.
Yeah, right?
And colourful.
Yeah.
And just it's so exciting when you turn the page and bam!
Whoa!
Wham! That was fun. Anyway, no, they kind of like came to form during the period between the Great Depression and World War II.
Mm.
And the popularity of comic books really kind of like, you know, exploded because of, and I think it might have been Stan Lee who was saying, it was really cool also seeing
He'll
Stan,
take credit for it. Even
yeah, that's exactly right. Who said it was, it kind of exploded in popularity because of people's general need for justice and this wanting to see justice. And I was like, that's so interesting, because like it was always about, like, all of the stories, especially in the early days anyway, was about the good guy, the superhero, who was a good guy back then. There was no complexities to it. There was like, he was the good one, was fighting the monster and would always beat the monster.
Yep.
And sometimes the monster would come back, I'll come back and get you. But the good guy was always acting from a place of wanting justice.
Yeah.
And that's where the popularity of comics books kind of exploded during that period of time. And I thought that was really interesting. And then what happened was, what it was always very clear, it was like, these are the good guys and these are the bad guys, and the good guys need justice against the bad guys because they're the bad ones, right? And then as like, you know, comic books began to grow and these characters began to kind of expand, the bad guys started to expand and they started to humanize the villains, and it kind of became about motive and why.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
And the idea of justice became really blurry, and then broody Twilight Batman happened. But no, I just thought that that was something, as someone who isn't a big fucking dumb nerd.
Again, we're not saying these things about you.
We have not come for you and now you're attacking us.
You dare call me a stupid bitch? You best believe.
We did say that.
We never said that.
No, we said it.
And now you're calling us dumb nerds.
I think you're right, and I think that's also one of the reasons that the MCU in the present day has been so successful because it's simple solutions to problems.
Mm. Yeah,
it's like we're living in this world where it's like, oh, you know, everything's bad and politicians are bad and, you know, all this sort of, and there's conflict, but what can we do about it? But in comic books and superhero movies, there's a guy and there's the bad guy and there's the good guy.
Yeah.
And somebody gets their head lasered off.
Yeah.
And it's, and everything's fine. And it's, yeah.
It reminded me, this is very, like, we're going a bit deep in these, but like, we've had, we had Alexi last week.
Well, I was
going
to say, yeah.
So we're just like gone, we've gone full, but it reminded me, there's just this, I just looked it up. I'd forgotten it. There's this, concept that I learned about a few years ago called the, and I'm so sorry to any film theorists listening because I'm going to like butcher this because it's not my jam.
Acting.
It's a thing called a camera. And basically it's like a still image, but if you do enough of them all at once.
Shut up.
No, it's this thing called it's about genre evolution and it's the four stages of genre evolution.
Okay.
And I just thought, I remember I heard it and I thought it was really interesting. It's the four stages are classical, experimental, parody, and deconstruction. Yeah, and those are the steps that happen. First, you start with the genre as it, and I feel like classical, experimental, parody, deconstruction has happened in the comics.
Oh, yep.
Mm-hmm. But I think we're kind of still in, we're not all the way along that line.
Yeah.
I think we're just hitting maybe the deconstruction phase, possibly the, like, Marvel is still in the classical almost. There's a bit experimental, but classical in its outlook.
That's interesting.
You know?
I think you're probably right. And I wonder if it's a little bit staggered. Like, do you remember Birdman? The Michael Keaton was in Birdman? Yeah. Like, that was Deacon's.
No,
was,
we're probably at deconstruction.
Well, I think it's probably a one step forward, two steps back situation. Like, I don't think Marvel did She-Hulk, the TV series. I really like that. Not a lot of people do.
My partner really liked
it. Yeah, I think it's good, but I think it takes some shots at some people who are on the internet who do not like being made fun of.
Dumb
bitches and
big,
so forth.
Big dumb nerds.
Dumb nerds.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that is about as far into deconstruction and parody, I think, as Marvel wants to get.
Yes.
Like, there's a bit at the end of that one where She-Hulk goes into the Marvel offices and discovers that all the movies and TV shows are being made by AI. And and I don't think they'll ever do that again.
That's very Black Mirror.
I don't think they'll get another series, and I don't think they'll do that again. But I think, yeah, you're right. I think they want to stay comfortably within classical, again, because you know, it's the iconic stuff and there's a lot of stories to draw from, but also because they've got that formula.
I almost think that the audience is too savvy now. That's, I think, part of the you can't just do the tropes of a genre without
playing with them.
Or doing them. Like, it's so ingrained. I think the audience is ready for the deconstruction phase. You know, where it's like, I know. Like, when you watch a superhero film now, you're like, I know. So it's like, there's got to be something else. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be. Even Joker, like, you know, that's a very polarizing film. And I don't know where I fall on it. I loved the first 40 minutes. I didn't love the whole thing. But I loved it for what it was doing. And I loved it for the fact that it was, you know, all this stuff.
Uh-huh.
And now we're going to use the fact that we can trust you have this knowledge to explore something else.
Yeah, right. Mm. Uh-huh.
And I think that's what we're ready for. And I don't think Marvel's ready to go there.
No, I think other companies will make attempts at that. Like, not the big two, but like other small will. But it's tough to do that and not, I mean, The Boys.
That's
a great example. But you need a lot of money to do it. Like, if you do a, you know, a, because they did a superhero movie many, many years ago. Like, if you don't, if it just comes off as cheap, and you either need a lot of money or you need a really, really strong concept to deconstruct or to parody, because otherwise it's just going to look bad.
It's the same reason why sci-fi is the books and the comics. Mm. Sci-fi has the same problem. It's so interesting when you can do it on a computer.
Yeah.
It's so hard when you actually have to get the money to make it. Mm.
Can I just say, you're both friends of mine. Oh, and I'd like to apologize for calling you big dumb nerds, because I've just been listening to you guys have this nice conversation and you guys are both so smart. No, because, no, it's so interesting. It's, like, I'd like to say that I'm obviously not fucking contributing much right now, but you got what you guys are saying is so clever. Like, I just think it's really cool, and I just wanted to address that I think what you guys know is cool. And if you're out there and you're a listener...
And if it took a weird German documentary in 10 parts for you to realise that...
Well, guess what, Mish? I've just been working to a formula. I've just learned all these sentences, and I don't know anything.
I'm just wanting to say that I realise that we have a lot of listeners that are probably like, hey, man, I'm a big dumb nerd, and that's so mean of you to say that to me.
I respect
what you know. But also you're a big fucking dumb nerd, and go out and get some kissies.
You ruined Star Wars.
Yep.
Don't ruin Marvel, guys.
Come on, guys.
Come on, you already ruined Star Wars. Have you learned nothing?
Oh, fuck.
I would love to know if you, Nick, I know this is not final thoughts on the documentary unless
we've
got to
talk about Johnny Legs for at least 2 minutes.
Mm.
Oh, well, yeah, the fact that it was one piece of archival footage.
Yeah, I when this started, I reckon 2 minutes in, I'm like, if John Leguizamo was in this at all, it's one line.
Yeah.
Like if he's a talking head in this, it's going to be one line at the end because they're going to get to the 90s and like when everything got extreme and Spawn and that. And he's going to be like, yeah, I had fun making that. Whatever, and then it's going to be the end. But then I'm like...
With an Ice Age 3 promotional poster behind him.
They've got him and he can't leave. They've got 10 minutes with him and they're like, let's squeeze out something about Spawn. Let's see what we can do. I enjoyed very much. This isn't final thoughts, but I just very much enjoyed watching the documentary. I thought it was really, really, really interesting.
I got to
see what a bunch of comic book creators actually look like because I've been reading their work for decades.
Oh,
and
that's
fun. Alex Ross looks like that. That's interesting. Mm. Good for him.
That's very fun.
I really liked the point in which John Leguizamo's archival footage, because the thing is we could review that, but just go back and listen to our episode about Spawn because it was literally a clip from Spawn.
From Spawn.
And also in trying to figure out what we were going to watch and, all of John, what we have left over of John Leguizamo's filmography, this particular documentary only said John Leguizamo was in it in like 2 of the 5 that I use.
Yeah,
so I was really worried that he wasn't in it, but he was.
Mm-hmm.
He was in it, so we're good to go.
He was in it by an AI, like the AI said he was in it.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
People didn't say he was in it.
That's 100%.
It was Google said he was in it.
But it came at the point right at the end of the doco as well, so we're talking around the late 90s when they've gotten to, because 2001 documentary, friends, at the late 90s point where they were like violence started to kind of...
And can I say there's nothing more late 90s, early 2000s than a conversation about violence.
100%.
No nuance, no like different kinds of violence or what violence in cinema represents. It's just, what do you think about violence?
Yeah.
And here's an image of John Leguizamo throwing this character into a fence.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
But there's morphing though. Look at the morphing.
if anyone's disappointed, if we have listeners that are just pure John Legs fans, we apologize. He's not in this one much. Watch Spawn. That's what I would say. Mm.
What I would love to know, actually, for final thoughts, is not about the not about this movie. I would just love to know from you, Nick, because this is where the conversation went. As someone who, you know, it's kind of your job to talk about comic books, think about comic books. Plus, you love them,
and you are the superhero guy.
You're our superhero guy. I would love to know what you think. Like the next, you know, as people's interest wanes, I think you sort of got to it with there'll be less of them, but they have to be good.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think the future of comic books is? And what more than that, what do you want the future of comic book movies to be?
I love that question,
Zach. Okay. What I would like is for them to slow down.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure I've talked about this recently on my own podcast, but the most recent Thor movie, they took 2 really, really expansive storylines that took years to play out in the comic books, like hundreds if not thousands of pages, and they just knocked them out in like 2 hours. They're just like, yeah, kind of whatever. And I think it's maybe because the tenure of a lot of these actors and producers and directors is sort of coming to an end. Mm. Like Kevin Feige, the guy behind Marvel now, he's got to retire at some point. Mm. And Chris Hemsworth doesn't want to be Thor forever.
No.
And so they're probably just like, this was a good story in the comic books. Let's just do it, knock it out real quick, and we'll say we did it, and that's kind of fine. But I would prefer if they were like, let's breathe, you know? Because also I feel like they have taken... Look, there's so many good storylines in comic books, I think, but what I feel like they've also... they've taken the last 10 years and they've taken 50, 60, 70 years of comic books, especially in Marvel, and just gone, just knock them all out really quickly. And I feel like if you keep doing that, you're going to burn through all the... You're going to burn through all the,
wasn't
the classic
Secret
material.
Wars like a multi arc? Like, maybe I'm getting this wrong, but there are, like, yeah, what you're saying is they've taken, that's probably a bad example, but these massive arcs and they've put them into one film or one story or one series.
Yeah, and just to say they did it because the fans demanded it kind of thing. And it's like, I mean, I think you should be more willing to, you know, Chris Hemsworth's not going to be Thor forever, recast Thor. There's got to be another guy, you know, who can conceivably... And because otherwise you're just going to run out, and then you've got to do the inconceivable thing, which is to get Hollywood producers to write their own superhero stuff. And they're bad at it.
Yeah.
Anytime they try to produce any kind of original, it doesn't work. Like, there's a reason they interviewed all these, like, legendary creators in this they know what they're doing. They know what they're talking about, and they know how to make the genre work with the tropes and the silliness and the what have you.
It should be a... There's almost an element where it needs to be a conversation between... I think when comic books are great... This is my final thoughts, but bouncing off yours. When comic book films are great is, I think, when it's a conversation between people who love cinema, directors and writers that love cinema and know cinema, and it's a conversation with, you know, the artists that know comic books and know these characters and know... those films, and it's when it's a conversation between those two things, and producers kind of step back a little bit. That's when you get good stuff, and when you give them a bit of freedom, and I think take your time and make good stuff. But I think that's really, I think there's great superhero films ahead of us, but maybe just fewer further between.
And if you could hire me to consult, I would hire you.
100%. You're my superhero.
Yeah, I'll take your money.
We're hiring you to consult.
Yeah. Nice.
We're paying you podcast money.
A coffee before the pod, didn't even get you. I'm sorry about that. My final thought is I'd like to watch X-Men. I'm open to that.
Mm-hmm. Have you not watched X-Men?
I did when it first came out, so I would have been in year six.
I wanted to rewatch X-Men after
this. Right.
Yeah, so this made me want to watch X-Men, and I feel like I could be on board for it. X-Men and Iron Man. They're my two.
Here's your X-Men viewing order.
Yeah.
X-Men. X-Men 2.
Yeah.
You can skip most of the rest of them. Logan.
Yeah.
To cap it off. And then there's X-Men First Class, which is set in the 60s. Ooh. And that one's pretty good.
That sounds fun.
It's sexy.
So can I see Logan without having seen 3, 4 and whatever?
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't need to do 3.
Yeah.
Is it not good? Not good?
3 was when the rot started to set in.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, got you. No, I think I could get on board for the first one.
Really, you could just see 1 and Logan, I think.
Is Logan good? Yeah. That's the Hugh Jackman one, isn't
that's
it?
He's in all of them, but Logan is sort of like the final chapter in his character's story. It's sort of set in the future, and it's like...
And Logan's the beginning of deconstruction. It's the beginning of that sort of... It's a demonstration of, like, you know, that a big movie can start to play. The way they read... it's a special film.
Yeah, yeah.
It is nice, actually. Okay, I should rewatch
I feel
Logan.
Like if I ever get ill and I need to take a week off or whatever, I feel like an X-Men moment might
I've
be
had
what
that
I have.
Thought.
Currently, I'm just finishing all of Sex and the City, and I'm up to the last 5 episodes, so I've got to get onto something else next. I've nearly watched every
have
single
Have you done the Sex
again.
And the City movies?
I won't. I've seen them. I remember them. I don't need to watch those
Two
again.
Is so
I'd
special.
Seen all of... I stopped watching Sex... I've obviously watched every episode of Sex and the City in my life, and I was just like, I want to rewatch them all. I haven't watched them in like 5 years, 10 years. Mm-hmm. Chucked them on. It's beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
My Leguistamo rating for this is 1.5 Leguistamos.
Yeah.
It gets it because I believe he deserves the superhero space. So I think it's a deserving space for him to be in, but he's in it for like 2 seconds. It's not the best scene in Spawn even. Whatever. So it gets, but it would get 5 Starlies.
What's this?
Stanley.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
nice.
But
nice.
It gets 1.5 Leguistamos from me. Zach?
Can't get over the fact that his full name sounds like the longer version of his first name.
Yeah.
For me,
have you guys seen Stan Lee without the all the the accessories, like without the
without the
glasses and the mustache.
Oh, wow.
No, show me. I'd love
that's
to see
really
it.
That's really funny.
We can track it down, but he just looks like the most generic man you've ever seen. So
incredible.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. That's funny that he's made his own iconography.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to give this one Leguistamo because he's only in it for one scene and it's a lot of makeup and it's not – they don't talk about John Leguizamo.
John Leguizamo at all.
Mm. You know, to get a higher score, if they had said something like, John Leguizamo's performance is, oh, my God, he looks like Lyndon Johnson.
Right?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's Stanley without his iconic – stuff.
We're going to forget, but listener, can you please remind us to post that photo. Picture when this comes out? But yeah, I'm going to give it one Leguistamo. But I thought it was interesting. One Leguistamo.
I'm going to give it one also. I was going to give it half a Leguistamo because he's just, you know, he's in it for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it got me to watch this documentary and I thought that was delightful.
And it gets the extra half for me because I'm on board with both of you, big nerds. But it gets the extra half.
Oh my goodness.
It gets the extra half from me because he deserved the superhero space.
Mm. Can I say one last thing, Mish?
Yes.
Watch The Boys.
You and Matt are on me about that.
It's really good.
All right.
Do you like The Boys?
I love The Boys. I think
all right.
Really,
if I ever get really sick, I'll watch X-Men and The Boys.
Yeah,
What a horrible week for me.
Getting familiar with the genre before you watch The Boys would probably be fun. So, yeah, do watch Iron Man and X-Men.
All right, I will.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. There's a lot of genre tropes where you're like, that would make a lot more sense if you're like, oh, I've seen a lot of Avengers movies.
I know what's meant to happen here.
Yeah.
Or like a lot of you have to watch Batman v Superman: Dawn of Justice because otherwise you won't understand the Dawn of the Seven. So.
Nick, do you have any anything you'd like to promote or anything you want to talk to?
Just feel strongly about. Look, I have a podcast called The Weekly Planet.
Yeah.
Where we talk about
check it out, guys. Yeah,
I think that they could be quite good. So I think that they'd like up their listenership.
Guys,
they're really going places.
We did recently a video on YouTube for where we talked about Secret Invasion, which is the latest Marvel TV series, and it's really an espionage series in the style of paranoid 70s thrillers. Mm. Just kidding, it's not. It's really boring. That video is doing well. So check that out. I think we had a bit of fun making that. So
great.
Thank you everyone for listening this week. Thank you so much to our superhero boy man. What do we call you, superhero guy?
Superhero boy man. Yeah,
superhero boy man.
Nick Thank Mason you. And hey Tom, can you take us away with a little bit of something? What should we? What we gave him a week off last week.
Just some generic superhero.
Yeah, some real 1970s Superman.
Yeah, that'd
like
be
go
nice.
go to a library of free music, Tom, and type in superhero and give us that. Like,
whatever's free.
It'll be like that.
I'd like that. That'd be cool.
I have a note just before we go.
Yeah, ooh, please.
It's unrelated to anything. But
can you put the superhero music underneath this?
Oh, yeah,
note?
It's very, very inspiring.
There we go. Put the superhero music under this, and then we can end the episode.
Then two notes that I. One is this documentary says Bob Kane created Batman on his own.
That's
controversial. He didn't. It was Bill Finger did all the.
Bill Finger?
Yeah, his name's Bill Finger. Yeah,
that sounds like someone in a graphic novel.
That's right. That's why he's been stricken from the record on account of how rude he is.
I don't know about you, but I'm quite fond of Bill Finger, and I've just found out about
him. Tell you who wasn't. Bob Kane and
that's right.
DC.
Like all the stuff, like the Batmobile and just the costume with the cowl and the cape and the wing and the symbol and that he wore all black and Robin and all this. That was all Bill Finger. That's right.
I like you. Hey, what was your other fact?
The other fact, I've just written here, I would have crushed being a comic book commentator in like the early 2000s. Because at one point there's like
crushing it now, man.
Thanks, man.
But you're doing a great job, superhero boy guy.
There's a moment in they've brought in that sociologist and he's like, well, the thing about Superman is he's very light and the thing about Batman is he's very dark and in a lot of ways it's the two sides of the same coin. I'm like, yeah, idiot. Great work. Good job, buddy.
Good job, brother.
You've crushed this. Anyway.
Thank you so much, Nick.
Okay, bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.